Welcome to the second hour's readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, April 23rd, 2020, local and state. Murray gives update on remote learning, addresses staff stress. OA News at OAOA.com. Remote learning, support of staff stress levels, and district efforts during this COVID-19 pandemic were addressed by Ector County ISD Superintendent Scott Murray during a Board of Trustees meeting. Murray offered an update and answered questions he's gotten on a variety of topics Tuesday. Delma Abalos, Board Vice President, was absent. This is the fifth week of remote learning, and Murray said 89% of elementary students are engaged, while 84% of middle and high school students are. Murray said ECISD recognizes this is a stressful time for families, but also for the district's 4,200 employees. Staff members can take up to 10 days of COVID-19 leave, and Murray said that has relieved some of the stress. ECISD also is continuing to pay its employees and will do so until the end of the year, June 30th, Murray said. Enhanced benefits are also being offered if anyone is struck by COVID-19. Counselors and the Employee Assistance Program also are available to district personnel. As for monitoring stress levels, Murray said a lot of that comes from supervisors. He said ECISD is making sure they check regularly on staff members. A survey is coming in early May, monitoring the overall condition of district employees, Murray said. He also reviewed expectations of teachers and administrators. Murray said teachers are expected to be flexible and available to students and parents and monitor and implement district curriculum. They should also provide support to students and parents and make sure supports are being provided to special populations, like special education and bilingual students. Teachers are also expected to offer timely two-way communication with students. They are expected to provide at least an hour a day of direct instruction to students and participate in weekly professional learning communities. Principals are expected to conduct weekly meetings with staff members, and executive directors of leadership are expected to be part of those conversations. Principals are expected to monitor daily instruction and hop into lessons teachers are conducting and engage. Murray said principals are conducting regular communication with teachers, parents, and students, and monitoring the schedules of teachers to make sure they're doing what they're supposed to, and monitoring grades. They also should be working with assistant principals to make sure they are following a schedule and supporting and serving staff members. Principals also need to ensure they are documenting all COVID-19 expenses because the federal government has offered some financial relief. Counselors are not only monitoring the help desk 5 days a week, but calling students and staying engaged with those they knew were fragile before. Murray said counselors also are making sure students are signing up for courses for next year and filling out forms for financial aid or college. On plans for the summer, Murray said they will be virtual and designed for kindergarten through 12th grade students. Enrollment. As of last Friday, ECISD had 33,031 students, which Murray said is 236 students more than the same time last year. He said it looks like the district will have about 34,000 students, approximately 900 more than this year. Plans for next year, Murray said as they think about the next school year, they are working closely with principals, other superintendents, and the Texas Education Commissioner. Whether to continue virtually or go back to school depends on what the local and state coronavirus situation looks like. Murray said ECISD has to plan for every scenario. In response to a question from Board President Donna Smith, Murray said not every child has a device because they don't all have access to broadband internet. But Murray said that's something the technology team is working on. He said there are still students who do not have access to any type of wireless internet, so ECISD is trying to find solutions for that. What direct instruction looks like for teachers depends on the teacher. Murray said teachers use a variety of technology options to reach students. He said ECISD has served more than 600,000 meals, and the ECISD police have conducted almost 500 welfare checks. The district recently received a $50,000 challenge grant from Chief for Change to broadband access and is looking for philanthropists to help out. He said the family assistance desk, staffed by counselors, will add extra hours on Tuesdays. After a closed session, the board approved the 2020 and 2021 employment contracts, updated language in a policy on employee standards of conduct related to searches and drug alcohol testing. The policy will allow the district to offer a contract to a potential employee pending the successful outcome of the required drug test, the board recap said. Approved termination of a probationary administrative contract for Lola Brooks and approved her returning to a teaching contract. Voted to hire Stacy Ashley as Executive Director for Human Resources and Albert Valencia as Director for Human Resources. On a separate item, the board approved a resolution to the 2019-2020 compensation plan. The recap said the revision changes the title of Assistant Superintendent of Human Resources to Executive Director of Human Resources. It is a title change only with no impact on the budget. Ashley was HR Director, Elementary Staff for 7 years and is a former principal, assistant principal, and teacher. She holds her Human Capital Leader in Education certification. Valencia was Director of Purchasing. He has worked for ECISD for 22 years. The last 7 as the district's purchasing director. Scott Murray. Education Foundation receives funding from HEB for books. OA News at OAOA.com. The Education Foundation of Odessa announced Wednesday that they are the recipients of a $5,000 gift from the HEB Tournament of Champions to provide new library books to Ector County ISD schools. We are grateful to HEB Tournament of Champions Charitable Trust for this gift that will help us ensure students at Johnson Elementary and Burleson Elementary have quality, relevant reading material to enjoy, Education Foundation Director Celeste Potter said in a news release. During the 2019-2020 school year, the Education Foundation invested more than $48,000 in new library books in ECISD through its annual grants program, Battle of the Blue Bonnets and Battle of the Texas 2x2s. The Education Foundation is committed to helping ECISD provide our students with the best education possible. Burleson Principal Tristan Spector expressed his thanks as well for giving students the gift of knowledge. I know that our students will love to have the new books to read. It will give them more choice in our library and will help them to develop a love of reading, Spector said in the release. HEB Tournament of Champions Charitable Trust, funded by HEB vendors and partners, is committed to supporting charitable projects and programs focusing on education, families, military, and youth. For over 30 years, HEBTOC has contributed to worthy causes throughout Texas.
Hello, this is Michael picking up an additional story from the Odessa American, Thursday, April 23rd. Local, News Roundup. Teenager charged with assaulting man as part of gang initiation. A teenager was arrested after he reportedly assaulted a 53-year-old man as part of a gang initiation. Angel Blanco was charged with aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, a second-degree felony. The reported assault happened around 12:19 a.m. Saturday in the 2200 block of Stoner Road, an Ector County Sheriff's Office affidavit detailed. Deputies reportedly found 53-year-old Richard Glenn White lying in the front yard of that residence on Stoner Road with multiple cuts to his head, face, and neck. White stated Blanco had done this to him and then fled the scene. White was transported to Medical Center Hospital by Odessa Fire Rescue, where he received stitches and staples, the affidavit stated. A crime scene in the master bedroom at White's residence showed a knife and a large amount of blood. Blanco was also reportedly listed as a missing person, and he was located by a deputy on Tuesday. Blanco made an unsolicited statement to the deputy that he was pledging the Serenos Criminal Street Gang in his hometown of El Paso, and this assault was part of his initiation. Blanco was arrested, charged, and transported to the Ector County Law Enforcement Center. He has one bond totaling $30,000 and was still in custody as of Wednesday afternoon, jail records show. DPS identifies man involved in fatal vehicle-pedestrian collision. Texas Department of Public Safety identified the 56-year-old man who died in a fatal vehicle-pedestrian collision after he was reportedly sitting in the road. The reported fatal vehicle-pedestrian collision happened at 10:05 p.m. Tuesday on 42nd Street, 3 miles west of Odessa, the DPS press release detailed. Amanda Davis, 34, of Odessa, was reportedly driving with 12-year-old Haley Davis in a 2012 GMC Yukon west on 42nd Street. Anthony Mouthop, 56, of Odessa, was sitting in the westbound lane of 42nd Street. The Yukon reportedly struck Mouthop. Mouthop was pronounced dead at the scene by a medical examiner, the press release stated.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Thursday, April 23rd, 2020. Opinion. Texas View. How did Dallas risk losing a critical federal hospital? One of the worst things that could happen to North Texas right now would be the loss of the pop-up hospital that the federal government is placing at the K. Bailey Hutchison Convention Center. But that is what was at risk this week because of a failure among federal, state, and local leaders to adequately communicate about what steps Dallas County needed to take to ensure the facility remained in the city. Thursday, April 9th, morning, the Dallas County Commissioner's Court held an emergency meeting to approve two large contracts in support of operating the 250-bed hospital. We hope that satisfies federal officials who were considering removing the hospital from Dallas and relocating the resources that come with it elsewhere in the country. As late as Wednesday, April 8th, afternoon, Nim Kidd, the chief of the Texas Department of Emergency Management, told us the hospital was at risk if Dallas County did not act quickly. This whole mess makes it critical to understand, after the fact, exactly what happened between Governor Greg Abbott and County Judge Clay Jenkins in this whole affair. The public was looped in late last week after Abbott's chief of staff warned Jenkins to take action to ensure the hospital remained in Dallas. That warning, in a letter, went public, and it revealed a massive break in communication between the governor and Jenkins in a time when we need them more than ever to be on the same page. And it happened at a time when the feds were threatening to pull the pop-up hospital. Late last week, Major General Mike Stone, The Army official overseeing the setup in this region of what are officially known as federal medical stations spoke with county and city officials, including Jenkins, and came away with the conclusion that the county was not taking adequate steps to open and use the medical station at the convention center. Last Saturday, Stone was in New Orleans managing the setup of emergency services there. He called Kidd to express concern about what was happening in Dallas. It was late, and Stone got Kidd's voicemail. "Hey, Chief, sorry to bug you on a Saturday night," Stone said in the message. "Late last night, we had a call with Judge Clay Jenkins. His team and his PhDs have no intentions of moving patients into the convention center, and the Department of Defense is confused. So I'll sit rep up, situation report up, my chain of command about getting equipment and patients moving in Dallas." Kidd heard the message the following morning and was alarmed. He sent it to Jenkins and to Mayor Eric Johnson and quickly had Jenkins on the phone. During that conversation, Kidd said he also became worried that Jenkins didn't have a clear plan of how and when the hospital would be used. Given the scarcity of federal resources, Kidd believed the hospital could be moved, he said. After he spoke to Jenkins, Kidd immediately contacted the governor's office to say he feared Dallas would lose the facility, he said. He believed it was his job to do all he could to ensure Dallas kept the hospital. "If Dallas County can't get this together, I'm going to fight like hell to keep it there," he said. Kidd stressed that he has worked in emergency management for many years under both Republicans and Democrats, and that he isn't interested in partisan struggles. Indeed, Kidd was the top emergency management official in San Antonio under Julian Castro, when Castro, former Democratic HUD secretary, was mayor of that city. After Kidd reported to Abbott's office, the governor's chief of staff, Luis Saenz, wrote Jenkins expressing concerns that Dallas could lose the federal medical station, a station that includes the services of naval medical personnel, as well as equipment supplied by the federal government. "Other jurisdictions need quick access to the facilities currently set up in Dallas," Saenz wrote. "If I don't hear from you by tomorrow, the process may quickly begin to move this additional hospital capacity away from Dallas." Jenkins called it a crazy letter that was essentially untrue. But the letter wasn't crazy or untrue. It accurately expressed what Stone had told Kidd and what Kidd had reported to the governor's office. Based on the timeline, it is easy to understand why Abbott's office was so concerned about what might happen to the medical station at the convention center and why it was appropriate to contact Jenkins in a formal way to clarify the county's intended use for the convention center. It's also understandable that, from Jenkins' perspective, the county was doing all it could to get the hospital ready to be opened, but to not transfer patients there until hospital capacity became strained. What's important to remember here is that every Texas and county official has the same goal: keep the facility in Dallas. It's time now for both leaders to work together to make certain this critical resource stays in Dallas during this crisis and that future problems are resolved before they become critical. The Dallas Morning News.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, April 23, 2020. Graduating seniors have the opportunity to take pictures in front of a balloon sculpture 10 a.m. to 7:30 p.m. Saturday in the front yard of 810 West Kansas Avenue, home of Cody Williams. The owner of Cody's Red Balloon said he is displaying the sculptures to celebrate the seniors, who will not have traditional graduation ceremonies because of coronavirus. He also will be making flyers for graduating seniors that can be displayed in front yards. Flyer orders will open this weekend. For more information, go to codysredballoon.com. HEB is expanding store hours. HEB is expanding its temporary hours of operation starting Monday. Stores will open at 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. until further notice, according to a press release from the grocery chain. An improving supply chain and stronger product availability are providing the capacity to serve more customers throughout the day, according to the email. In addition, the bakery, deli, and floral departments will be reopened.
We've now read all the local articles from the Midland and Odessa papers for Thursday, April 23rd. For the rest of our time, we will bring you local news articles from the previous day's newspapers that we haven't had time to run until now.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Wednesday, April 22nd, 2020. This article is entitled, Planning and Zoning Approves Senior Housing Complex, by Mella McEwen. After deferring a vote at its April 6th meeting, members of the Planning and Zoning Commission approved plans to build a multifamily housing complex at 45 Corporate Drive. The commissioners held a virtual meeting via Zoom. A unanimous vote by the commissioners approved the request by Maverick Engineering for a zone change from PD, Planned District for an office center, to PD, Planned Developmental District for a housing development. The vote had been delayed because commissioners questioned why the plans did not meet the city's minimum requirements for parking spaces and storage. Owner Colby Dennison's explanation was sufficient to win approval for the planned 295,000-square-foot complex of 124 units that will offer affordable housing to senior citizens. Dennison, founder of Dennison Development and Construction, explained that 70% of the units in the complex will be affordable. A lot of our residents don't have cars, and we provide transportation. We have buses that take residents to appointments, the grocery store, the mall, Dennison said. These are age-restricted to 62 and older. Our average in our facilities is 75 to 83. About 25% are dual occupants, meaning couples. No children are allowed. Companies like the one called A Place for Mom tend to be one person per unit, which explains our parking. The affordable housing supported by the city council, Dennison said. We need a lot of affordable housing in Midland, and the aging of the population is well known. We'd rather provide housing and green space for our seniors versus unused parking spaces. He noted that this was the first time he was asked about storage at his developments, but he said large storage spaces are not in high demand among his residents. Each unit will have a storage closet, and there is extra storage within the buildings. Once built, the complex will make up to 1,500 units Dennison owns and operates for seniors, he told commissioners. The Midland project will be financed by Housing and Urban Development and through low-income tax credits, both of which have age restrictions within their deeds, he said. The tax credit, which he said is the funding mechanism providing the equity for the complex, is 55 and older. HUD, being the primary mortgage holder, has a designated senior product where the complex will have to be completely leased to primary head of household 62 and older. Commissioners also unanimously approved a request by Patrick Brown for a zone change from AE, Agricultural Estate District, to PD, Planned Development District, for housing development on two lots at 6611 Elkins Road near Arapahoe Road. Brown told commissioners the development, Angel Haven, is designed to provide supportive housing for those living a life of recovery. It will consist of 26 pre-manufactured homes of various sizes that will ultimately house up to 80 adults and children, a community park, sport pavilion and swimming pool, stable and petting zoo, community room and chapel, and laundry and meeting room. There will also be a single mother's grouping. The first phase will include 11 homes housing 32 adults and children. Two existing residences on the properties will be used by the management staff to house up to four adults and their children. The commission also approved a request by Jose Ramos for a zone change from MF 22, multiple family dwelling, to SF 3, single family, on a lot at 101 South Carver Street near East Wall, so he could build a residence. Commissioner Josh Sparks said the commission should look at such zoning clusters and look for ways to cut down on the paperwork provided of such developers.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Wednesday, April 22nd. Cesar Ornelas' law to donate coronavirus safety and meal kits. Kermit. Cesar Ornelas announced Tuesday that his law firm will donate 50 coronavirus safety masks, gloves, etc., and meal kits to Kermit and Winkler County families starting at 10:30 a.m. Thursday. The distribution will be at Chaotic Wings and Pizza, 122 West Austin Street in Kermit. Supplies are limited and open to the public. This week, the firm donated coronavirus safety kits and meals to El Paso and Doña County families, donated coronavirus safety kits in Hobbs, New Mexico, and provided social distance Easter egg hunts to 200 children in Kermit. The kits will be handed out following social distancing standards. MISD Board approves Nelson as HR official. Gregory Nelson, Ector County ISD Assistant Superintendent for Human Resources, is expected to take a job with Midland ISD as Executive Director for Human Resources and Employee Relations once he signs a contract. The Chief of Human Capital Management is Woodrow Bailey. Nelson's start date at MISD has not yet been determined. He said he was told ECISD Superintendent Scott Murray wanted to do something different with the HR department in Odessa and didn't see Nelson leading it in that direction. Nelson has been with ECISD for a total of 14 years, but started his career in Midland as a teacher. He said his plan now is to complete his career in Midland. He has served in administration at Permian and as principal of Odessa High School and most recently in human resources. Nelson said leaving Odessa is bittersweet, but the superintendent has a right to put people in positions he thinks are best. He added that he thinks Murray can get ECISD where it needs to be, although it could take a number of years. And Nelson said he continues to pray for the entire community. He said Murray is the right man for the job of superintendent, makes hard decisions every day, and always thinks things through. At their meeting Tuesday night, the board was going to consider a request from the administration to change the job title of Assistant Superintendent of Human Resources to Executive Director of Human Resources and to hire a Director for Human Resources. Deputy Superintendent Stephanie Howard said Monday the district plans to change HR to human capital and have a talent development side down the road.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, April 21st, 2020. Hogue Seeks End to Gridlock by Bob Campbell. bcampbell@oaoa.com. San Angelo. Democratic congressional nominee John Mark Hogue is a serious man who has undertaken an idealistic enterprise. Running against well-heeled Republican nominee August Pfluger II of San Angelo in the November 3rd general election, Hogue counts on voters' fatigue with Washington gridlock and his appeal to average citizens to win in the heavily Republican 11th Congressional District. One of the problems we have in our country is that anyone who has a different idea than ours is evil or the enemy, said Hogue, an attorney and former San Angelo City Councilman. I think people are tired of the environment in Washington and the leadership we've had. We need someone who is willing to reach across the aisle and work with the other side. My theme is common folk, common sense, and common decency, which we haven't had in Washington for a long time. I'm concerned for our country in the long haul because of Congress's complete inability to accomplish real systemic changes. We need to send a man to Congress who is not focused on playing the political game, but is more interested in what needs to be done to best represent the people of this district. The 54-year-old candidate's top issue is bolstering rural health care in the big west-east running district, where only about half of the 29 counties have a regular medical facility, and an emergency may necessitate a 100-mile drive. It can be a life and death issue, he said. The crisis is brought home further by the fact that the hospitals in Odessa, Midland, and San Angelo are overburdened. Hoag, pronounced H-O-A-G, is a native of Bullard, south of Tyler, who lived in Beaumont, Trinidad, Tobago, and El Paso, as his father Gail worked as a Southern Baptist pastor, missionary, and publisher. His mom's name is Sylvia. He worked his way through Baylor University for a political science degree and graduated from St. Mary's University School of Law in San Antonio. Certified in labor and employment law, he is a partner in the San Angelo branch of the Jackson Walker firm. He and his wife Claire, a San Angelo native, have two children. Ironically, he lived next door to the Pflugers for 2 years in the early 1990s, when his future opponent was in high school. Hoag was on the San Angelo City Council from 2006 to 10 and serves on the Concho City's Parks and Recreation Advisory Board and Tax Increment Reinvestment Zone Board. He attends a Southern Baptist church and a Greek Orthodox church, quipping, "I'm a Baptodox." Working at home because of the COVID-19 pandemic, Hoag said, "It's hard to run for Congress when you can't talk to anybody. I can offer something my opponent, a 42-year-old recently retired Air Force fighter pilot, can't. I have practiced law here for 28 years and have represented governmental entities all over the district. I've had cases in most of the counties, so I don't have to learn the district." Hoag said the U.S. House of Representatives will be controlled by Democrats next year, and the 11th would do better with a congressman from the majority party. He is not related to James Stephen Big Jim Hoag, who was governor of Texas from 1891 to 95, and for whom a South Texas county is named. Hoag's law partner, Sam Allen, said he is a man of varied interests who has acted in community theater and produced the Shakespearean comedy A Midsummer Night's Dream outdoors last year. The first time I met him, he was a law clerk at a firm here, and I thought he was precocious, Allen said. Then I came to learn that John Mark is scary smart. You wouldn't know it if you just ran into him at a dinner party, but he has an amazing command of present and past information and knowledge. I think that's what draws him to the Greek Orthodox Church. It's surprising that he can have those characteristics and still be a common everyday guy. He knows the changes that need to come about in government, and he has the wherewithal to carry them out without regard to any particular political party. The Reverend Mark Muller of Richmond, southwest of Houston, said Hoag is a good, decent, and kind man who doesn't just talk about the need to care for the marginalized. He puts feet to his caring. If he's elected, he will make sure they have a voice, Muller said. John Mark is a family man of deep Christian faith. He is not wealthy because he represents people who can't afford to pay him the rates that a lot of attorneys demand. That's why so much of his work is in employment law, caring for people who feel like they have been taken advantage of by employers and corporations. Asked how much he will spend on the race, Hoag said it won't be over a few hundred thousand. It costs an average of $3 million to win an open congressional seat, and one of the problems is the idea that you have to be rich or sponsored by rich people, he said. but money doesn't vote. I come from working class people. My dad was the first one of his family to go to college, and my grandmother was a welder who built destroyers and liberty ships at Orange during World War II. My multicultural background has taught me how the less fortunate live and how people may see issues from different points of view. That's where the idea of compromise comes in. I understand what their concerns are so that we can move forward. Hello, this is Kay, reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, April 21st, 2020. Page 2, read. Chevron donates $40,000 to the Boys and Girls Clubs of the Permian Basin. OA Life at OAOA.com. Chevron is donating $40,000 to the Boys and Girls Clubs of the Permian Basin as part of the company's social investment and support initiatives to help communities and nonprofits address the COVID-19 public health crisis. These funds will be used for a variety of programs aimed at providing food for families, children, and older individuals, as well as ways to bring Boys and Girls Club programming to youth. Funds will also be utilized for basic operational needs to maintain the club both during and after the crisis. Chevron has long been a supporter of the Boys and Girls Clubs in Midland and Odessa, and we are so grateful for their continued backing during these uncertain times. David Chancellor, Executive Director of the Boys and Girls Clubs of the Permian Basin, said, "This era of a global pandemic will be difficult for the extremely vulnerable children we support, and we are so grateful to Chevron for helping us provide vital services for them." Programs that the funding from Chevron will support include a partnership with the West Texas Food Bank, in which the Boys and Girls Club will be assisting with food deliveries to those who are either quarantined or shut in. This may include families and senior citizens who are unable to go out in public for a variety of reasons. In addition, the club has also created activity bags with the help of community partners that include books, STEM projects, crafts, and more that are being distributed during food deliveries and upon request. Already, the club has distributed nearly 4,000 activity bags throughout the course of the crisis. Chevron is proud to support the Boys and Girls Clubs of the Permian Basin's programs and activities, Kaylee Dunn, Public and Governor Affairs Advisor for Chevron, states. Supporting our youth may look different during a public health crisis, but the mission remains the same. Thank you to the Boys and Girls Club and others who have stepped up to the challenge. Additional information about the Boys and Girls Clubs of the Permian Basin can be found at basinkids.org. Additional information about Chevron is available at www.chevron.com. Silva Law Group, PLCC, and the Permian Basin Trial Lawyers Association commit $100,000 to Food Bank. OA News at OAOA.com. Giving Tuesday is coming early this year. The West Texas Food Bank announced a challenge match from the Silva Law Group, PLCC, and the Permian Basin Trial Lawyers Association in the amount of $100,000 for Giving Tuesday Now, which will take place May 5th. The challenge match opportunity follows a $100,000 donation from Juan V. Silva and the Permian Basin Trial Lawyers Association last week. I really cannot thank Mr. Silva and the Permian Basin Trial Lawyers Association enough for stepping up to provide this opportunity to help West Texans double their impact. These gifts come at a time when the West Texas Food Bank is having to go to extraordinary lengths to keep our shelves stocked and to make sure our 80-plus partner agencies in 19 counties have what they need. Donations like these help ensure the West Texas Food Bank is able to provide life-sustaining, nutritious meals to families in need, and all the gifts we have received from our caring community Help the food bank continue providing these services to our community for free. West Texas Food Bank Executive Director Libby Campbell said in a news release, food donations to the West Texas Food Bank have dropped to almost zero as the retail outlets are selling out of items which are normally donated to food banks. To keep up with the increasing demand for food and to offset the decreasing amount of food coming into the food bank, we are having to purchase more food than ever before, Campbell said. We've served over 10,000 households in the last 4 weeks, which is up over 30% from the same time last year. We have seen over 1,940 new clients through the pantries at the food bank locations, and we've served over 1,220 households through our mobile outreaches at 12 rural sites. As members of our great community of the Permian Basin, we would like to be able to help our people maintain the stay-home policy so that we are all protected. Protect the medical staff and our police force, our heroes in the battle against this virus. And the only way we can do this is by helping those that are not able to work but still need a helping hand. So on behalf of the Silva Law Group, PLLC, and the Permian Basin Trial Lawyers Association, we wish all our members of the community the best. Juan V. Silva. Should the match be completed, the total donation of $300,000 would help the food bank provide around 1,200,000 meals. Telehealth. The Medical Center Hospital ProCare primary care physicians and specialists are continuing to provide care during the COVID-19 pandemic through telehealth visits. This allows established and new patients to visit with a doctor from the comfort of their own homes. Patients can connect directly with a provider from their smartphone, computer, or tablet. Simply call one of our MCH ProCare offices to schedule an appointment. For a list of providers, they can also visit procareodessa.com/find-a-physician or call 640-6468 for more information. Medical Center Health System and MCH ProCare want the community to know we are here for the community during these uncertain times, and that we are dedicated to continue making sure West Texans are treated and taken care of. HDL triglycerides, LDL. Dear Dr. Roach, I'm 82 years old and I take atorvastatin 10 milligrams daily. My HDL is 85, triglycerides are 65, and my LDL is 46. I read that these low levels put me at risk for a hemorrhagic stroke. Should I be concerned? GG. Answer. Atorvastatin reliably reduces total and LDL cholesterol. It also reduces triglycerides and may raise HDL cholesterol. In many well-done randomized trials, people at high risk for heart disease who took a statin drug had lower rates of heart attack, overall stroke, and death than those who took an inactive placebo pill. It is true that people with low LDL cholesterol and low triglycerides are at increased risk for hemorrhagic stroke. However, it is not clear that having low cholesterol and triglycerides due to taking a statin is a risk factor for hemorrhagic stroke. The available studies are conflicting. There are some important additional points I want to discuss. The first is that statins are proven to have benefit in people at high risk, especially those with known blockages in their heart arteries. Those at lower risk will not get as much or possible any benefit. The second is that most studies have not included people in their 80s, although most experts do continue to recommend statins in high-risk people at least until age 85. Third, the dose of atorvastatin you are taking may be higher than you need. Only people at the highest risk for heart attack, such as those with previous heart attacks, are recommended to have the LDL cholesterol so low. Finally, reducing other risk factors for hemorrhagic stroke, especially elevated blood pressure and excess alcohol use, is particularly important for people with low cholesterol and triglycerides. Viagra, Cialis, and heart disease. Dear Dr. Roach, I am an 80-year-old man who still has psychological drive, but who has lost the physical ability for an erection. Is there any safe way to restore this? I have had multiple bypass surgeries, so I am fearful of medicines like Viagra or Cialis, but I wonder about the safety of testosterone, FED. Answer. Although older men often have decreasing ability for an erection, finding out the underlying cause is important before trying medications. In men with a known history of blockages in the artery, whether in the heart, leading to a stent or bypass, brain, leading to stroke or TIA, or elsewhere in the body, claudication, painful calf muscles, with walking is a common symptom. It is worth considering whether the arteries that supply the penis with blood flow might also be blocked. This might require specific treatment. In men without known blockages, erectile dysfunction is a clue that there might be arterial disease and should always be considered. Treatment with sildenafil, Viagra, or similar drugs is usually safe in people with heart disease. However, these drugs may not be used by men who take nitroglycerin or related drugs. Further, they can drop the blood pressure. It's usually not enough to cause problems, but your heart doctor can tell you whether it's safe for you. Testosterone is used only in men with signs and symptoms of low testosterone and at least 2 documented low blood levels, ideally with tests taken at 8 a.m. To your good health, Dr. Keith Roach. Roach's column appears Tuesdays through Saturdays. Readers may write him at P.O. Box 536-475, Orlando, Florida, 32853-6475.
Dear Abby, Mom on fixed income supports a house full of freeloaders. Dear Abby, my grandson, his girlfriend, and recently my son, who had to move in, are living with me. She is the only one working. My grandson has been sitting on his butt the last 2.5 years and does minimal work here in my home. All 3 of these adults live here for free. I am 79 and on a fixed income. I pay for everything. They were supposed to be saving money so they could get a place of their own. That's a big joke. All they do is spend, spend, spend. They sleep all day and play games on their computers all night. I have seriously considered shutting off the internet, which I pay for, to see what they would do. I have been talking to a counselor due to my stress and anger issues. The counselor has strongly advised me to evict them. My daughter told me if I do, I'll never see her or my 2 young grandchildren again. She means it. I'm tired of being the caregiver. I feel used, but can't set boundaries very well. I'm also afraid of my 20-year-old grandson who has terrible anger issues and who put his fist through a wall when I called him lazy. Should I put them out or, to keep peace in the family, continue to let them use me? Used up. Dear Used Up, there will never be peace in your family as long as you allow yourself to be held hostage by threats and intimidation. Your anger and boundary issues will resolve themselves if you act on the advice your therapist is giving you and evict these parasites. First, discuss this with a lawyer to see what steps you must take, and because you fear your grandson will become violent, you may need help from the authorities to guarantee your safety from him when he goes. As to your daughter, I predict she'll keep the grandchildren from you only until she needs something. So be prepared. And please consider talking to your therapist, who seems to have more of your interest at heart than your family members. Dear Abby, my wife and I are in our mid-40s with 2 kids, 9 and 6. We are in the early stages of our estate planning, and of course the topic of who would look after our kids has been discussed. Our first choice has lovingly agreed to have our kids join their family if my wife and I should die. However, many estate planning forms ask if there is a secondary option on who we want to be our children's guardians in case our primary choice can no longer fulfill that role. How do we tactfully ask our second choice if they are willing to be the backup? I worry that the couple may be offended that they aren't number one, and this may cause tension and seriously damage our relationship with them. Parents in a predicament. Dear parents, do not offer apologies or explanations unless you must. Simply ask the backups if they would be willing to step in, should the need arise. If you are pressed about why they are not your first choice, answer honestly. Your reasons should be respected. This is not a popularity contest. It is a serious consideration for the future of your children.
Jacqueline Biggers Stars. Note: Biggers Stars is based on the degree of your sun at birth. The sign name is simply a label astrologers put on a set of degrees for convenience. For best results, readers should refer to the dates following each sign. A baby born today has a sun in Taurus and a moon in Taurus. Happy birthday for Thursday, April 23, 2020. Your career goes in a different direction, and you go with it. Talented, you make a success out of this easily. A prestigious organization is helpful with your self-image. You balance your money. If single, you experience a new attraction to an exciting acquaintance. Take it slow to remain in your comfort zone. If attached, you are like 2 peas in a pod and are very lucky to have one another. Cancer is as security-minded as you. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. Aries, March 21 through April 19. 4 stars. Those who seek your financial assistance can be offered help and encouragement in other ways. Your natural intuition will be heightened. Your sixth sense is developing. Observe how you feel when a hunch turns out to be correct. Tonight, email your accountant. Taurus, April 20 through May 20. 3 stars. A business partner has expectations. Adapt and keep the peace. It is not the time to be a perfectionist. Questions of fairness and legality might have to be addressed. New ideas are suggested and business combines gracefully with pleasure. Tonight, do what you most enjoy. Gemini, May 21 through June 20. 2 stars. A close companion repeats old patterns. Detach if you feel a relationship is draining you. Reclaiming your independence means salvation. Others are involved in their own needs for the time being. A child needs particular care. Tonight, take the night off. Cancer, June 21 through July 22. 4 stars. Today is intellectually stimulating. You find you are more expressive and involved. You receive an invitation to join a high-powered group or organization. Grab it. You have been absent for a while, but community needs you back. Tonight, catch up with old colleagues. Leo, July 23 through August 22. 5 stars. Today brings you greater visibility. One of your achievements is praised lavishly. Communication skills are an asset to your professional situation. Friends offer valuable new ideas during the course of casual conversation. Tonight, draw up a list of your goals. Virgo, August 23 through September 22, 5 stars. As travel is desired, so are journeys of the mind and spirit. If you have always yearned to write, now is the time to jot down those jokes, stories, and poems. Expect an increase in energy. Tonight, poring over travel brochures. Libra, September 23 through October 22, 2 stars. Conversation will be focused on generating income. Promising opportunities for rewarding employment for a loved one are discussed. Release stress and anger. It can impact your health and compromise your immune system. Tonight, take some time alone. Sort out your priorities. Scorpio, October 23 through November 21, 3 stars. You often begin and end a relationship suddenly. A reunion with a longtime friend is now likely. Enjoy chance meetings with those from your past. You might consider the pursuit of a dream once abandoned. Tonight, intimate dinner with someone you once knew. Sagittarius, November 22 through December 21, 4 stars. Your home becomes a peaceful haven for problem solving. An adjustment in your domestic routine is due. It's best to have a family meeting and allow everyone to say what they are truly thinking. Tonight, be friendly and tolerant of the foibles of a loved one. Capricorn, December 22 through January 19, 5 stars. Cultivate and socialize. Purchase new fashions. Revel in the goodness you are attracting. A positive and nurturing relationship bonds. Patiently direct valuable energy into constructive ends. Tonight, much can be accomplished. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18, 4 stars. This is a wonderful time to facilitate better communication between relatives and extended family members. There has been a distance. Home improvements and real estate transactions will be a focus. Today brings specifics to light. Tonight, an early night with family. Pisces, February 19 through March 20, 3 stars. A sibling or neighbor is changing. Do not be in denial when obvious signs are being sent. Transportation needs are being considered and information exchange is very important. Be alert and stay informed, and all will be well. Tonight, chat with old pals. Born today, playwright William Shakespeare, 1564, actress Shirley Temple, 1928, comedian John Oliver, 1977.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or your favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.